Hello, welcome to Universal Soul Love. This is Detective David Love. Welcome to our show. Today I have our very special guest, Attorney David Gallup with the World Service Authority with us today. David's a past guest on this show, and I'm very much in support of what the World Service Authority is doing. And I just want to jump right in, and because we're limited on time, but David's got a lot of great things to tell us about the World Service Authority, all the updates and projects that he has going on there. So welcome back to the show, David.
Thank you, David. I'm so delighted to be here with you today and to speak to your audience about the human rights and world citizenship work of World Service Authority. I've been with the organization since 1992, so this is my 25th year with the organization. I first came on as its chief attorney to establish a legal department for the organization. The purpose of the legal department was to provide backup for the documentation that people receive from the organization, such as the World Passport or the World ID card or the World Political Asylum card, which many refugees and stateless persons have found useful, but not all the time. And because of that, we need to have legal backup with legal advocacy to assist people who are trying to claim their human rights and are not always successful because, of course, they have the walls oftentimes of the nation state standing there in front of them. And we try to help them tear down those walls. So I'm so delighted to be here to talk about, not just the past 25 years, but also what's been going on even in the past year since we last spoke. I also actually forgot to mention that I became president of the organization in 1999. So that means that I'm directly responsible for the administration of the organization, for our projects and programs to help determine with, along with our board, where we are headed. And I'd like to start off with mentioning, for us, the most important project is the idea that world citizenship can be and is already an additional valid citizenship that anyone may claim and exercise as a fundamental human right, in addition to any other citizenship that they may already have. And the importance of that is, if, of course, anyone watching the news nowadays knows the really sad and frustrating and angering situation of the fact that there are close to 65 million displaced people around the world. And when I say displaced people, that means people who, because of war or oppression, like refugees, right, are displaced. People like the Rohingya refugees in Myanmar. There's a million of them, but there's 10 million.
Well, people are suffering.
Yeah, people are suffering.
This is an epidemic. And I'm so glad that I don't know what to say. I'm so grateful that you're doing this with this organization, with World Service Authority, and I'm just thank you so much for being here today to talk about this on our show and the issue of sovereignty and that this is a natural birthright. I just want to mention that, and I don't mean to interrupt what you were saying. Continue.
Oh.
I just wanted to add that.
I'm glad you brought that point up because sometimes people hear about world citizenship and they think, that means that I'm going to have to give something up or I'm going to have to renounce something lower. Well, not at all. World citizenship, which I'm sure I mentioned on our last conversation, is like citizenship is like concentric circles. First, you're a citizen of your family, then you're a citizen of your town, of your region, of your hemisphere, of the world, of the Milky Way galaxy, of the universe, and if there is such a thing, of the multiverse. We're a citizen of all of those. We don't give up any lower level allegiance or rights by adding a higher understanding or coherence. That's one of the main functions of World Service Authority because of those displaced people by war and oppression, by the environmental devastation. People are displaced who aren't displaced because they need to leave because of an oppressive government, but even because the sea levels are rising. So that is, out of all the millions of people, that's a great number. And many of those people, not as much as we would like to because we're just not a big enough organization to do it yet, but we're trying to help as many of those people as we can lift themselves up out of either the oppression or out of the seawater, whatever they find themselves in. And these documents like the World Passport are a beginning tool, you might say, to help them get out of that situation. But it's not enough. We need to establish the institutions of law at the global level that will help us, and when I say us, I mean humanity, live together peacefully. That's really the final goal.
It is. It's fundamental. We're talking about oneness of consciousness, and this is, of course, much of what we talk about on this show is spiritual in nature, and oneness of consciousness is fundamental. The law of one is exactly what you, I know that anyone listening to this show that's spiritual will understand exactly what you're talking about in terms of sovereignty and global citizenship. It's a fundamental human right, and it's just saying that we're all human beings, we are all living beings, we are all natural beings, and we all have these natural rights that we're born with. We all belong to the planet. We all belong to each other. And so it's just a change in thinking. There's always been this us versus them manipulation going on, I think, in the world. And we need to stop looking at it that way and look at it as what's good for one is good for the many, and what's good for the many is good for the one, I think. Very important view, I think, to take on, a belief system that's really useful.
Yes. Well, I mean, the founders of America said it right, I think. United we stand, divided we fall. And what we're saying is we need to unite not just within countries, but beyond the so-called or putative borders that we have created. We need to see ourselves as one human family. Like you said, in a spiritual way, we're all children of the universe. Right. And what we're trying to do with, I guess was my point about starting our conversation this way, is to say that our main important project, beyond anything else that we're doing on a day-to-day basis, which does really help individuals, and I'll get to that momentarily, mm-hmm. Is to promote the fact that we are all world citizens by birth and in fact, but that it should be a legal status, an official legal and political status that anyone can have. Because if you can have that status, that would immediately remove the idea of 65 million displaced, or at least refugees and stateless persons, because then just because you have to pick up and leave from your home doesn't mean that you're not going to be welcome somewhere else. If your rights are respected wherever you go, that means that your citizenship status, which is really your rights and duties within a particular communal framework, will still be met wherever you find yourself on planet Earth. That's really the point, is people should be able to pick up and go if they need to or if they want to, and find a home wherever they need on planet Earth. I mean, planet Earth belongs to all of us. It doesn't belong to any of us. In fact, a better way of putting it is we belong to it. In a sense, we are here just as the caregivers or caretakers of the planet. It, in a sense, and the environment own us, and we have to respect that, which I don't think humanity is doing enough of yet, and this is why we find ourselves in situations of global warming.
That's right. We're in this situation because we, somewhere way back, and I don't know where this started, where we had this idea that the planet is for us and we can dominate the planet and we can use it as we please, when in truth we have a responsibility to the planet and we have a responsibility to each other. This is a global community, so we have a responsibility to care for each other and a responsibility to care for the planet as much as we do for ourselves. It's a very as within, so without sort of
framework, yeah.
Principle, you know. And I guess if we do need to establish it as law, if we can't sort of have this indoctrinated into our minds as the truth.
Yes. Well, what you're saying is along with rights comes duties. We have a duty to our fellow human being and also a duty to protect the earth. If the earth dies, we die with it. And you're right about law. I mean, of course, I'm an attorney. I'm a lawyer. So that was really what I studied in school, of course. But it's also dear to my heart from the work at World Service Authority, because by in a sense, what is law? Law is still a human construct. But if we write down a rule and we all shake hands or agree upon it, and we write that rule up on the wall on a piece of paper or something, we all agree to abide by it, that becomes, in a sense, a mutual contract or agreement that in a participatory way we can create and we can respect. This is what we need to do, but we're trying to explain at World Service Authority that we need to do it, to do this process of law beyond the nation state. Not to get rid of the nation state. There's nothing wrong with the nation state system. The problem is with the anarchy between the states. So it's a question, when you mention law, it's a question of creating a common world law that is a law that covers the whole planet, so that you cannot go and shoot someone on the streets of mm-hmm. DC or on the streets of Baghdad and come home a hero. That should be considered murder wherever a killing goes on. But it's not like that within the nation state system now that supports and promotes international humanitarian law, which are the laws of war. And how do you put law on something that is inherently anarchic? War is something that is bred from anarchy between the state. So that's really, we're trying to put a framework on the global system that doesn't yet exist. Well, it exists in certain forms. It exists, of course. There's already law, you might say law of nature, like the environment. There's already social world law, like, for example, the Universal Postal Union, because you can send a letter and you know, people know how to follow the rules by putting a stamp on and writing the address. It gets there, and you're glad that that service works. Well, that's what government needs to be, is a service to all people, and but it has to have the law and enforceability behind it, and that's of course the hard part. And I want to talk about our idea of our World Court of Human Rights, but not immediately, because there's other things I'd prefer to start with. But
I just want to quickly add, I'm a legal investigator. I work primarily in criminal defense and civil investigations, civil litigation support for more than 20 years, and I'm still an investigator here in Australia, and I understand law very well, well enough as a for what I do in my profession. And I know that borders, any kind of border, is a human-made, it's a concept of the mind. And people often say possession is 9/10 of the law, but possession and ownership are also concepts. And law is so these are all things that we can work with, and I think we live by agreement, and we should live by mutual agreement. It should be that things are mutually beneficial to all, if we're going to promote these ideas and the way we live, so that everybody can live peacefully and in harmony, and everybody can have their happiness. And I just think that's, I know that's a high ideal, but that's what we're here for. And I love what you're saying. And I admire you and your work and respect what you do.
Thank you.
Very much in support of trying to make the world a better place. And I don't see anything wrong with that. And we should be able to do that and accomplish that. So thank you.
No, you're wrong. Well, what you're saying is establishing a global social contract. I mean, if you look, for example, the Declaration of Independence, because you talked about this, the idea of happiness. We have the rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, right? And if government no longer fulfills those ends, we have the right to establish new government. That's certainly what the Declaration of Independence said, and we're saying, well, that's we agree with that. We do want to establish new government, and when I mean new government, I mean government at the highest level, that one that represents humanity. And for Gary, and I don't know if your audience has ever heard of Gary Davis, that's with two R's, G-A-R-R-Y-D-A-V-I-S. He had given up his U.S. citizenship back in 1948 and claimed himself to be a world citizen, left and lived the rest of his adult life till he was almost 92 as a world citizen. But many times prior to creating the world passport, he was detained simply for having no document, because the state's governments wanted to ID him. They wanted to know, who are you and why are you here? Well, if he had no document, they didn't like that. Either they wanted to paper him with documents, or they wanted to bar him from coming in. But as any other human being, he has had a fundamental human right to freedom of travel. And he was always trying to exercise that, but would come into the clutches of the national border guards, for example. And this is why he found it so important that we establish institutions of law beyond the nation state, like, for example, which doesn't exist yet, a world parliament, also a world court of human rights, some kind of maybe world sustainable development organization, beyond the United Nations, too, because the United Nations was founded to rid the world of the scourge of war. Well, I mean, how many wars have been, 150 to 200 wars since 1945? So if that's their main purpose, they haven't been doing it. Only because they don't have governmental authority. That's not to say that there aren't agencies or departments of the UN that aren't helpful. They are dramatically helpful to many people on the ground on a day-to-day basis. We need to give them more power. That's the problem, is they don't have enough. They have their hands tied behind their back, and they can't do what they need to do to help the people who are suffering and to make a change in the world, which is really why we're focusing on this idea of world citizenship and global governmental institutions that may not exist yet, but like you said, we're the people concerned. We're the ones who can create, because those are all constructs, we can play with those constructs and change them and make them work for us, for everyone. Because if everyone's needs and rights are met, I was going to just simply say, then there wouldn't be war, because there wouldn't be humiliation that oftentimes is the cause of war.
That's right. And I think we do have the power to do this.
Yes.
Each individual has the power to do these things, to promote this and pursue this and accomplish and achieve these high ideals, and we should, just as much as any leader can do this. We all I'm just, you know, part of this show is, and part of our mission on Universal Soul Love is about empowerment and empowering people that, you know, to know that we are co-creators and we have just as much personal power, inner power to make change in the world as much as anyone else on the planet who's at the top of the pyramid, so to speak, you, me, and anyone. And we just have to know this deep inside, and you're doing that. And I think we can all do this, you know, we can, and people are doing it. That's the good news, is there are a lot of people out there and a lot of organizations doing amazing things right now to make the world a better place. So just got to keep going.
Definitely. Well, when I speak to audiences, one of my favorite questions to ask is, if an extraterrestrial came down and knocked on your door in the middle of the night and said, bring me to your leader, who would you bring the extraterrestrial to? So, you know, some people say my mom. They bring them to their mom, right? Because maybe in their life their mom is their leader. Some, of course, other people might say the president or the prime minister of their country. Some people say the secretary general of the UN. But of course, my favorite answer, not necessarily the best answer, but my favorite is me. And I would have them say, me. Look at me. I am a leader.
Yes.
I represent humanity. I'm a microcosm of the macrocosm. And why not speak to me? And that's really, I think it is the best answer, because it shows that we are the governors. We are the legislators, right? You might say. We're the leaders. Yeah. Each of us.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. Yeah. Thank you for saying that.
You're welcome.
That's really, that's inspiring. It's really important that we know that. Yeah. All right. So what's, What else do we have going on at World Service Authority?
Well, so just this is sort of moving maybe a little bit away from the deep philosophy discussion we've just had.
Sure.
Just maybe to bring it down to earth a little bit.
Yeah, and no worries. I know I've probably thrown you off a bit, but that's okay.
No,
this is a
no, I love talking philosophy. That's fun. But so just a couple things that are going on in Somerset House, which is a in London, in England, there is an art exhibition where several different countries are providing what's called a white flag exhibition about utopia. And what's really cool is one of the curators of the exhibit had asked for us to send information about World Service Authority and a sample world passport, which we did. And it's really cool. You can go online. It's called dezeen, dezeen.com. It's an online magazine, and you can find out and see pictures of this really interesting art exhibition. Sadly, it ends tomorrow, or actually, I guess later today in most of the world on the 27th. But it is supposed to take up residence at least for a time in Milan, in Italy. So we'll move from London to Milan. But I think that was really cool that. People might look at the world, reimagine the world in a new way, and that people could see the idea of a world passport, that we could come together just with one kind of ID document to represent that, maybe what in the, might seem like utopian to some people, but to us, it's our day-to-day job to make it real, to make, right, in a sense, ideals real.
Right.
And then it was, but what's also a coincidence, at the same time, but this one's going on till the end of November, there at the Mares House for Contemporary Culture, which is in Maastricht in the Netherlands, it's spelled Marres, there's another art exhibition called The Measure of Our Traveling Feet. And it's a wonderful, really well-done exhibition about migration and identity and what it means to be within a citizen of a particular community, what it means to travel and leave that community, and what do we learn when we travel. So this is a wonderful exhibition that's going to be going on for another few months. So if you're, of course, in the Netherlands, I would highly encourage you to go take a look at that. And there's also there, not just a world passport, but we're have a couple videos that we're showing. I think that there will be a sneak preview of the documentary on Gary Davis that is coming out very soon. Gary, this is actually something that's, I guess, really new, because I don't know if I talked about it the last time we conversed, but there's a film producer named Arthur Kanagas and his co-producer, a woman named Melanie Bennett, who put together about an hour and a half documentary on the life of Gary Davis, why he renounced his U.S. citizenship. The fact that his brother died in World War II, the fact that he was a bomber pilot and was forced to kill people with bombs, this led him to create World Service Authority, where, like I said, where I've been working for the past 25 years to save other people's lives. So they're going to hopefully show this sneak preview of the documentary in Maastricht, which will be exciting. And I also, speaking of the measuring of our traveling feet, another thing that relates to social media, but a little bit different. There's a man named Nikos Hadjikostas who wrote a wonderful book called Destination Earth. And I did do myself an interview with him on our YouTube channel, which is YouTube.com/user/World Service Official. That's the, but you can also get a link to it from worldservice.org, our website homepage. But he talks about his book Destination Earth because he spent about 6 years just all throughout those 6 years simply traveling to a whole bunch of different countries around the world. And he talks about the importance of long-term travel for each of us, if we can do it, to learn about other cultures, societies, languages, and how to get along with people. And what's so beautiful about this book and why it's dear to my heart now is because the last chapter is called World Citizen. And he actually, in a sense, dedicates the entire book to the idea of world citizenship, and the and as he was traveling, he learned about Gary Davis, the founder of World Service Authority. So it's a wonderful read. I ordered it myself, but he also sent me a free copy, which was nice. But so I think I have it on my e-reader as well as a physical copy. So that I wanted to mention that to you also. And we have been much more active in the past, I would say 3 or 4 months, because we've had a new social media volunteer intern in our office on our Twitter account, and of course we were tweeting about the Olympics, and I don't know if I mentioned him before, but there's a man named Nathaniel Mills who's a vice president at World Service Authority who was an Olympic speed skater back in the early 90s, and he's his idea was to create an Olympic team that would not be based upon a country where one is born, but would be based upon just your abilities, your skills as an athlete. And then whenever one of those athletes would win, they would play the Olympic anthem. Well, what's so amazing about this last Olympics, if you watched any of it, was was Team Refugees, the refugee Olympic team. And when, you know, should any of them have won, they would have played the Olympic anthem and not a nation state anthem. And that's really all the Olympics should be that way. It should be not competitions between countries, even though their Olympic charter says it isn't, but it ends up being that way. So how many more golds did we get than you? You know what I mean? Once again, that we versus they mentality that you mentioned just a few minutes ago. So I certainly encourage people there's links to these, our various social media sites, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or whatever, link up and join and share with other people, because that can only help us to get the word out more about the idea of world citizenship and world law. Those are really important ways to help us to reach out to a wider audience. And that's why I'm so delighted to be speaking with you today, because of your wide audience already, where people may not have heard our previous show, previous conversation, and may hear this today. And I don't know whether it has been. I don't know if people really know that much about what we do at World Service Authority. And so what I would like to do.
No, we have more time.
I'd like to read just a few snippets of a few letters that explains why people even reach out to World Service Authority in the first place. Because if you simply go to our website, you might learn a little bit like, oh, they're promoting world citizenship. Oh, they're issuing these documents like the World Passport. But then you may not get a full understanding of the why that people come to us, especially people in the developed world, you might say, may not have necessarily an automatic need, for example, for world citizenship or to get a World Passport. Although many, many people from the developed world do get these documents because they want to promote or support the ideology behind it that we are all world citizens and we should be protecting each other and the planet, certainly. But let me just read, if you don't mind, a couple snippets of a few letters here that we've gotten in the past few months. Here's one that says, Dear World Service, I'm a Syrian citizen. I'm in desperate need of your humane and kind assistance for me and my family. I was born in Syria in 1966, and we've been living abroad for 3 years now in Turkey, and we're humbly asking for your assistance in getting passports for us to be able to move freely and peacefully in this world, which is your motto. I humbly thank you for your kind services. Another letter from a fellow in Nigeria, who says, I'm a holder of a world passport issued in 1991 as a stateless person. And it was issued to me for free due to financial difficulties and no proper means of occupation. I've traveled to Nigeria, to Benin Republic, to Togo and Ghana several times without any hindrance at the borders. Please, I want to inform you that due to relocation, I've misplaced it. And basically, he's asking to get another one. Here's a man from Angola who says, I'm an Angolan citizen refugee in South Africa for more than 20 years with my wife and children. Since the peace process in my country, the refugee status in South Africa were withdrawn. And my case has been thrown out in South Africa. He needs ID. He says, I need ID documents and passwords for myself. So not only can we go on a church mission, but we can, if we are forced to, leave South Africa with your document. There's a woman here who says, first of all, I want to inform you my situation is critical. It concerns health. I've got to get out of Brazil. I've got to go to Curacao for medical care. And I've been trying for 3 years, but haven't had success. This is a frustrating labyrinth. And she wants to establish a new life in Curacao, she says. We've got, you know, letters from Burundian refugees. Here's one from a person in Myanmar. Was in Myanmar. He says, I'm currently in Thailand for the last 10 years. After all my family members were killed by the Myanmar army, I luckily survived. I'm suffering to live my life here with no documents and no papers. I'll never get out of Thailand. He says that he did get a Myanmar ID, but that will be expiring soon. And he's tried to contact other human rights organizations, but he never gets any reply. It's so hard to survive without any legal paper, and I can't go back to my country anymore. I hope you'll reply as soon as possible. Here's some people from India who say, we're really upset with India's legal, political, and economic system. It's making people's life hell day by day. And with the reputation of the Indian passport getting lower, we, my friends, relatives, and other ones, want to be world citizens. This step might change our lives. Please help us complete the process. So these are just some you know, small examples that I pulled out of our mail. One final one where the person says, I'm writing to inform you of the various times and places where my WSA documents came to good use for me. It meant at those times either I was accepted or refused, and the WSA documents did the trick. First incident was at I won't mention the name of the bank, but at a particular bank, and he said he opened an account with his WSID card and passport, and he had no problem. The second time he was hospitalized and was accepted as a patient and given full treatment, where normally only U.S. citizens receive treatment. And he says, I always carry my WSA documents on me. I've been able to open a personal mailbox, use it to receive checks at the bank with no problem, and even rent an apartment for a friend. Now, see, these are some examples of why people reach out to us, just because their lives have been made difficult for having no document, which is not any fault of their own and not even necessarily any fault of their parents, but just of the situation that they're in. Just think about how when someone survives an earthquake or some kind of tsunami or something where, you know, any papers that they might have had have been totally wiped away, and the government may not even have a capacity to replace those documents immediately. And this is why there's such a need for this organization. Now, I do want to, I feel compelled to say a caveat here. Of course, I'm a lawyer, and lawyers always say caveats. But, and that is, you should be know that because it is possible. When you carry the world passport, you become a human rights activist, a human rights educator. You have to demand in a peaceful, polite, professional, persuasive, persistent, and patient way with perseverance that your rights be respected. And they may not always be. And when I say they may not always be, you need to know, if you decide to get these documents, that it is a possibility that you could be harassed at a border. You could potentially be detained or even your document confiscated. And that's actually why we created WSA's Legal Advocacy Department, to provide the service to assist people when their rights are violated. They can report the violations to us, and we can demand redress through the governmental means on their behalf. So I'm not saying that it's always easy and that these documents are always going to be the panacea or the be-all and end-all that people can use to go wherever they want to, whenever they want to. That's, of course, the long-term goal. The long-term goal really is for us to be able to simply exercise our innate and unalienable rights without even having to present a document. I mean, sometimes people ask me, hey, David, where, you know, where were you born? And I say, planet Earth. And they say, where do you live? And I say, in my body, which are both true. And that sort of...
Well, that's a very spiritual answer.
Well, yeah. And it's not, I didn't come up with that. I wish I had. Sure. But some people have told me some of these things over the years. And of course, when I hear something like that, like one fellow once said to me, David, I feed two birds with one corn. And I said, what do you mean by that? He's like, you know the normal expression, killing two birds with one stone? Well, that's a really violent expression. Why don't you say, I feed two birds with one corn? I love that. I think that's so...
Okay, well, that's an improvement. Anything we can do to improve, and I think...
Right. Well, we're so brainwashed to think in almost a we versus they, or a success-driven, or a almost a violent mentality against one another. And we need to have a loving mentality.
Yes. And you know, what you're doing, I mean... It's a fantastic start. I mean, we live in a paper-based society. We're paper-based. We have paper-based identities. I know this more than anybody. I think I'm a bit of a master of the paper tiger after more than probably 25 years of being an investigator, following paper trails and whatnot. I couldn't even begin to tell you, but yeah, I mean, we live in the real world, and people don't always – we may have rights, and people may not always respect them, and that's just clear from the headlines, the world issues. So sometimes you do have to assert your rights and state them clearly, and oftentimes it's a very difficult negotiation, I think.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Trying to be, it's like having I've spent time with working in disability law with people with emotional support animals and assistance animals, service dogs, and even there, people don't always respect the rights of people with disabilities or intellectual disabilities who have certified assistance dogs and don't always want to admit them. And even though they may have a right under law to do so, and the animals certainly don't have a right to disturb the business or the commercial or the service industry or whatever it is, wherever the person is and the animal is, there's always, and you can't, it's not helpful for the person to be belligerent and hostile towards the person that won't admit them in their assistance animal. There's always a process and a way of dealing with these situations, and it's always different situational. So,
well, that reminds me of an individual when you talk about you having to claim your rights because no one will claim them for you. We had a document holder, a world passport holder, who actually had a, I don't know what I'd call it, but like a spiritual companion, which was his pigeon. It was like a pet pigeon, you might say. And what was really interesting, what we did is, of course, he originally wanted us to put a picture in his passport of him with the pigeon together. But of course, that would not follow the international standards for machine readable passports. So what we told him we could do is have, of course, his just picture in the data information identification portion. But then on the affiliation page, we provided a photograph of the bird, its name, at least the name that he provided, you know, that he calls the bird, and an explanation that it was a spiritual companion and that he would need to travel with it. And he actually called upon us to contact several bus lines and train lines when they were giving him, like you said, a hard time because he needed to have this animal, this creature, this being with him at all times, because without the animal, he became a little distraught. He became, I think he had some perhaps PTSD type issues, but having the animal, having the bird with him, this fellow being or creature, you might say, calmed him down. So it really was a question of, you might say, a disability or a different ability where he needed that bird. And we were able to, with the means of the world passport, provide proof that he was traveling with this companion. And it was helpful to him.
That's a great story. That's very unusual. It's amazing some of the stories I hear, and it's true. And it sometimes we don't know what's reasonable for the other person and what the other person's true needs are, and it really comes down to, you know, what's a reasonable accommodation, and it's comes down to what's reasonable, and that's often what law comes down to, and it's very difficult for us to know what's for someone to know what's reasonable for me and you, and for me and you to know what's reasonable for someone else. And we really have to be actively listening and compassionate and empathic in order to understand the other person and their situation and for them to understand us. And it's not always easy. And we really have to stay centered and try to, you know, express ourselves clearly and without anger. And I don't always do that well. But, you know, I really like the golden rule, treat others as you wish to be treated, as a fundamental principle and philosophy of life. And it doesn't, I'd like to believe that it certainly can always work, doesn't always in the real world, but that's why we're here. We are here to be advocates, to help empower people. That's one of the missions of Universal Soul Love, and I know that's one of your missions, and you're doing a great job with that and your staff. So,
well, yeah, I think
I'm not sure what else you want to go into.
I think you're right about you have the word universal in the name of your show, and I think that reminds me, of course, of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, that is really, like you said, a fundamental rule of law is do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. And I think the Declaration of Human Rights from 1948 is a great restatement of other additional rights. I mean, of course, a basic one just even being the right to live. I mean, obviously, if you kill someone, you've taken away every other single right that they potentially could have had. So for us, I mean, it's a question of survival of humanity and survival of the earth as basic, really the most fundamental rights that could exist, is because if we destroy the earth and it's our only parent, it's our only home, then we're gone with it. And so I guess, you know, this brings me actually into, once again, if we have some more time, to talk a little bit about some of the interesting legal cases that we've been handling lately. And then maybe I can, if you have other questions along the way, ask it. But otherwise, I can conclude talking a little bit about, after that, our World Court of Human Rights, which I think we would lead into from these legal cases. So some examples of, like I gave you some examples of why people get WSA documents. But we help people through our legal advocacy department, even who do not have WSA documents. Just because you don't have a passport doesn't mean we're not going to help you. If someone approaches us with a human rights matter and we're able to help, I mean, obviously we have a small staff, but if we're able to help, we want to expose that violation of rights among the media and the government and demand redress either through legal means, through petitioning or legal letter writing campaigns, or if not, then through moral pressure by exposing it to the world. And so people come to us, like I said, whether they have WSA documents or not. And some recent examples of that are there's a fellow from Angola who came to our office in Washington, D.C. and has been in the United States for more than 10 years. And he got asylum already. It's been, I don't know, 8 years ago at least. But because he's on something called the terrorism-related inadmissibility grounds list, simply because he fled Angola and the Angolan government puts people who flee as refugees on this list, the U.S. government has temporarily barred him from getting a permanent residence, like, you know, a green card, which is ridiculous because he was involved with the opposing party to the government of Angola, but only as their accountant. He just helped them with some finances, and he never did any kind of actual participation. He was never in any kind of military garb. He was never carrying any kind of weapons. And he fled and got asylum from the U.S. government. So the fact that he got asylum, and they understood, because you can't get asylum if you've actually taken up arms against others. So they knew that already. So it's like a mistake. So we've had a case like this in the past, just a couple years ago, where a person had been in the U.S. for about 12 years. He came to us, told us his story. We wrote to the U.S. Immigration Ombudsman. And within 2 months after he gave us the full details, he had his green card. So this current person in a similar situation we're working on, and another person, actually a woman from Angola, came to our office about 3 months ago, and she had not exactly the same situation. She just had to explain in a letter what her situation was, how that she was not a part of any violent or extremist group at all in Angola, and we helped her write that letter because her ability to speak English was very minimal. So we helped, you know, you might say, pull out or eke out the information from her so that she and we could write this letter, which she sent off to immigration. And then also within about a month, she got her green card. Then some other really, I find, sort of sad and difficult cases. There's a man who reached out to us from a I guess, a psychological institution here in the United States, who was being detained there against his will. And he really begged for us to contact them about the fact that they were going to force him to provide blood and other bodily fluids. And so we had to quickly send a fax, because there was no other way to reach them, because they weren't answering their phones, to say, please, you know, you need to explain what you're doing here and whether you have the legal authority to take these bodily fluids before you do that. If you don't, you could be subject to legal action. And of course, we're not really these people's lawyers. We're advocates on behalf of human rights. They need to get their own sure. local lawyers, but we work with them by writing legal briefs, a friend of the court, amicus curiae, friend of the court briefs to help them. And so that was sort of a sad situation that is actually still going on. There's another situation that's still going on with a man in Hong Kong who, and I guess I can't go in too great of detail, but he had a warrant against him for something that he didn't even do, because he was in Hong Kong when someone took some of his property and did something. And like I said, I can't really go into details because it's still sort of a pending case. But they took some of his property, did something bad with it, and of course he got in trouble with it. And he was not even in the country when it happened, but because it was his property, they thought it was him. So then the U.S. government refused to issue him a passport, because his U.S. passport, meanwhile, that he's been there in Hong Kong for 7 or 8 years, has expired. But because there's a warrant for him here in the United States, they wouldn't do it. But after, and of course, by the way, I should mention, we have to verify, because we're required by law, as any organization or individual is in the United States, to comply with various presidential decrees or congressional made law that pertains to compliance, like for terrorist-related activities or trafficking of weapons of mass destruction or other criminalities. So we, of course, have to vet every applicant before we provide any kind of documentation or assistance to anyone. But this person, we were vetting and contacted various police authorities about him, and they had no problem with us issuing the passport. So we said, well, if these police authorities who, you know, at a higher level said it's okay, well, then it must be okay to do this. So we did, right. And now he presented that passport to the court in Hong Kong to see, hopefully, they will actually say, okay, well, so now that you have a legitimate document, we will let you get on a plane and return to your home. Because right now, with no document, of course, they're going to just probably put him in jail, which is horrible. Right.
There's a lot of... flabbergasted by these stories. I'm really not. I mean, I've had so many of my own in my career, but there's just so many horrible situations with people beyond what we could even imagine and that you're dealing with. So just sorry to interrupt you with that. Keep going, please.
No, well, so one final case, which I can only once again just mention briefly because it is an ongoing case, but maybe your audience has heard of an individual named Yasin Bey. He's also known as Mos Def. He's a hip-hop artist and actor. And he actually got the world passport last January and was attempting to use it to go to a show in Ethiopia. He was stopped at the border for various reasons. Once again, I really don't want to go into the great details, although you could look it up in the news. And some of what you might read in the news is legitimate, but not all of it.
Sure.
What we were able to do was to draft a legal statement to President Zuma of South Africa explaining that this passport is a valid and legal document, and showing how the South African government had recognized it on multiple occasions, over 20 times over the past 20 years. So they could not deny its legitimacy. And the fact that we did that has been helping him in his legal case there. So, I mean, we can help people, like I said, whether they have WSA documents or not. But, and I guess this is getting me to sort of my final point of what I wanted to talk about today, and that is our World Court of Human Rights. A project that we're working on, because people are falling through the cracks in this international system, we're here to try to catch them, but we can't catch everybody. Look at all the horrible war that's going on in Syria. Look at the violence that still is perpetuated in Iraq, Afghanistan, Central African Republic. I mean, you name it. There's multiple. It's horrifying. There's multiple wars and incursions going on around the world, or Boko Haram in Nigeria. So the point is, we need a World Court of Human Rights beyond the nation state that would make sure that the nation state, and maybe not even just the nation state, but even corporations or others that perpetuate violations of human rights. And I don't mean genocide or war crimes, because that's already handled by the International Criminal Court. But I mean human rights violations, like the right to adequate water, or the right to a safe place to live for a person who's been displaced, whatever. These fundamental human rights are not being met. And you should be aware that 60% of the world's population have not even a regional human rights system, and that's for Asia. Because, for example, the European system has a European Court and Commission. The Americas have an Inter-American Court and Commission. Africa has an African Court and Commission. There's even an Arab Charter of Rights, but there's not yet for Asia a regional court. So that what that means is for all those people who cannot get justice within their country, either they're going to have to flee or they're going to have to suffer because they can't go beyond that country. There's no place for them to go to effectively get some kind of legitimate redress in a global venue. This is why we've been working on our World Court of Human Rights. And one exciting thing, which even though I may have mentioned this in our last conversation a year or two ago, is that we actually got all the chief judges of the Supreme Courts of the countries of the world who were in attendance at a chief justice conference in Lucknow, India, to unanimously agree to accept the idea that a World Court of Human Rights must be created, and not just any sometime in the future, but as soon as possible. They all agreed to that in their final resolution to that conference. And we have we're working with a lawyer and a consulting firm in Vermont, where Gary Davis had lived during the last part of his life. To promote this, we're going to be working on, we've already promoted it on various parts of certain bar associations like the American Bar Association. We're hoping to do a webinar on it. We're hoping to write some law journal articles on it very soon. And of course, to get great funding. And there's actually a collegial organization, which I should mention because this is something extremely new, to World Service Authority. World Service Authority is a global service public human rights organization, but even though we are a nonprofit, we don't have a federal nonprofit status because we're also political. We're not strictly educational. A year ago, we received a 501c3 nonprofit status for our new World Citizenship Foundation, which means that if individuals out there in the global public hear this and are interested in making a tax-deductible donation, at least to people here in the United States, I'm not sure what it requires in other countries at this point, but they can make a tax-deductible contribution to the World Citizenship Foundation in Washington, D.C., which will be helping to create this World Court of Human Rights and this global human rights system. So right now, of course, there is no actual court or court building like there is the International Court of Justice or the International Criminal Court in The Hague. But we hope to see a court system like that. Maybe it won't be in the next 5 years, maybe not in the next 10 years. But if we can get something like this to exist in the next 15 to 20 years, this could provide a venue for so many people who are voiceless now, who need this court dramatically to not only to expose or shed light on the violations for which they're suffering, but also to demand and receive some legitimate redress. Because right now, nation states can violate our human rights with impunity. And that's a problem. Impunity is a problem. If we cannot receive justice, well, no justice, no peace, right? So this is where we're at with that project. People can email us to info@worldservice.org. If they're interested, I will send them we have a SurveyMonkey survey on the World Court. I can send you the link to that, and anyone around the world can, in a sense, it's like voting on whether you think that this idea of a world court is good or not. We want to get as many opinions from people from all fields, not just a legal field, not just educational field, but we want artists and engineers and other people who, whatever field that you're in, students, to take this survey and say yes or no, we think this is a good idea, or and give us comments and suggestions while we're still, in a sense, creation phase of this. There is actually already a statute for this court, and you can actually find more information at the separate website, which is worldcourtofhumanrights.net. So I think you do need to put the www in front of that to find it. But so there's a lot more information there on the court. I kind of feel like our main focus tonight has really been on citizenship and how that relates to law, how that we relate to each other as humans, in a peaceful way or not, how we can come together sort of on a contractual level, or if that falls apart, what can we go to? What venue can we go to find assistance? And whether that might be World Service Authority's legal department now, or in the future, a World Court of Human Rights. That's what we're working towards.
That's what we're working towards, and that's and this show and Universal Soul Love is fundamentally, I think, part of our mission. We all have a everyone, I believe, that comes on this show, we all have a common mission and a shared vision, and it's all towards improving the conditions of humanity and the conditions of the planet and just, like I said, making the world a better place. It sounds a little quaint, but just true. That's what we're all trying to work towards, and that's what World Service Authority is doing for sure. And the World Citizens Court, I think, is a great idea. Maybe you need an investigative unit to go out and document these cases.
Exactly. You've hit the nail on the head. You're right. This is exactly right. We do.
Well, maybe that's something we can work towards, too. I'm taking some advanced, because I'm an investigator here, but I'm also taking some advanced security courses, security consulting. And it's interesting. We have the Australian view. A lot of the investigation training courses are mandated by the, at least here, by the New South Wales Police. But the training is really interesting because it's a lot of what we hear is based on de-escalating and defusing conflicts and confrontations and hostile, violent situations, rather than what you often see in America is going to the top of the use of the force continuum with deadly force immediately, shoot first and ask questions later. And I do understand that in the U.S. it's a much violent, it's just generally a more violent culture. And Australia is just very different, and the views here are different, and the attitude. But in the beginning of one of the first security classes I took, they were talking about fundamental human rights, right to life, right to movement. And I know that's exactly what you're advocating. So
definitely. Well, yeah, I'm so delighted that we share this idea. I mean, this, like you said, like your show has the universal soul love, each of those words are so important. Universal, bringing, uniting, and it's, that means everything. Soul meaning what's deep inside our spiritually, and love is then what we give out to others. So it's uniting the deep spiritual inside, whatever is inside of us, with the love that we can share with the world and with each other. I mean, I love that, and that's certainly, I mean, those principles, when you put the three together, are certainly what we're doing at World Service Authority, what you're doing by sharing these ideas with the world. And I love you for that love.
Thank you. Well, you know, like I said, everybody that we have on this show are people that I like to work with, and I'm trying to form collaborations with organizations like yours and leaders of various organizations. We had Sasha Stone on here before with New Earth Project, and he has the International Tribunal of Justice that he's been working on, and I think he was on around the same time that you were, more than a year ago, and hopefully we'll get him back on the show to hear an update and developments with Sasha Stone and his and the New Earth Project soon. But yeah, I think it's all about, we need to collaborate and unite and try to work together and support each other in this common mission and shared vision. That's just how I think and operate, and hopefully we can do that, and I hope that people will support the New World. Sorry, I'm getting confused here.
World Service Authority.
Oh, yeah. Too many universes, worlds, and so we're all one. So,
well, definitely. Yeah. Well, certainly, I can certainly say to your the public who's listening, we certainly not only want, but we need your support. We exist because of the global public. We do not get funding from any national government, from any private institution. It's all the individuals around the world, the world citizen public, who support what we do, either through document issuance fees or making donations one person by one person. And of course, it's not really enough to do what we really want to do adequately. So I would also encourage people listening to make a donation or email us, and we can send them a how-to participate flyer, which has about 12 or 13 different ways that they can participate in the human rights work and the world citizenship work of World Service Authority. I'd really encourage the audience listening to do that.
Yeah, I encourage that as well. I totally understand how much work you do, because Universal Soul Love is solely self-supported by Lana and I, and We just we do the work, and we do this radio show because we love it, and we love the people, and we love you for what you're doing, and just want to contribute. Any contributionism, it's a very important word, and something that we need to talk about more. But thank you so much for being on the show, David.
Well, David, my pleasure. I'm delighted, and once again, I hope to catch up with you in the next year or two and give you another update about where we're at.
Okay, well, good things to come. I know it. I'm an eternal optimist. Not always, but I like to maintain that focus. And I know that you've been doing good things for a long time. I've been following World Service Authority since I first found out about you and your organization back in the early 90s. And I'm just so appreciative to have met you and to have you on our show and to be working with you. Thank you once again.
Well, my pleasure. And one of these years, I hope to get to Australia and New Zealand, and I'll drop by and actually show up on your doorstep, and we can meet personally. Or if you're ever, of course, out in Washington, D.C., I'd love to have you come and meet us at our office. That would be wonderful.
That would be great. You never know. I'm always on the move, so anything's possible. We live in a world of unlimited possibilities.
True.
So, okay. Well, thanks again, and we will see you next time on Universal Soul Love. Bye for now.